Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everybody. We made it to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, as always, good, bad, and crazy martinis today. We start with the good. And the good is that, we've been saying all along that the president doesn't really expect Republicans to approve his jobs plan. What he really wants is to be able to demagogue the issue for another 14 months all the way to Election Day 2012. But there's been a little bit of problem on the way to that strategy. And that's the Democrats are jumping off the ship as well, following that huge Republican upset win in a heavily Democratic district in New York City just this past Tuesday. So now you have all these different lawmakers backing away from the president, backing away from this jobs bill. You've got Bob Casey in Pennsylvania saying that he doesn't like the fact that it's this monolithic bill and they want them to pass it all at once. He says we should break it up, which is exactly what Republicans want to do on the very few provisions that they actually like. You've got Mary Landry backing away from it, and she's not even up for re-election. Then you've got folks who also don't like it, like Jim Webb, who's not even up for re-election. His seat is, but he's not even on the ballot this year. And that's before we even get to the Nelsons and some others who are really vulnerable. Here's Ben Cardin, who I think is up, but probably isn't in much danger in Maryland, answering a question about the Democrats pulling away from the president.
A number of Democrats were suggesting that they can't support the president's plan in full. So as you look at what's going to happen in the coming weeks here, is it now clear that the full plan doesn't go forward, that this is done piecemeal? What do you see happening?
Well, I think the president's laid out the right plan. I think Democrats and Republicans need to come together. It's not going to be what the president wants.
I always love that kind of logic, Jim. The president's laid out a great plan, but what we're going to pass is not the plan that he wants us to pass. So even Ben Cardin realizes
it's great, and we need to come together to pass something different.
That's exactly right. So if the president, I don't know what he thought this rollout would get following the speech just over a week ago, but when you've clearly lost James Carville and now you're losing people who actually have key votes on these sorts of issues, the strategy might already be in the rewriting phase, even when you are way away from an election campaign.
Yeah, I think, we can put a lot of this on the two special elections. But in a way, I think actually it's more than this. I mean, probably about a week ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago, you saw Democratic members of Congress grumbling that when Obama went out on the trail, he would say, the problem is Congress. Congress has to do its job, et cetera. And their part is like, hey, we haven't carried enough water. You can't specify. You're lumping in us as part of the problem. You're going to expect us to take all these hard votes and then you're going to run against us. If I were, say, a preacher, I might say, the chickens have come home to roost, Greg. use a phrase that just kind of popped into mind. That the Senate Democrats, and I think probably there'll be more than a couple in the House who feel like, look, Obama has asked them to make some really tough votes. And in retrospect, the stimulus was a tough vote. They ended up paying a big price for that because it was seen as such a failure. Now, here's Obama with a bill that he kind of knows deep down is not going to get passed. And that if he really wanted to pass it, he wouldn't have tried to fund it all through tax hikes. And he wouldn't have, there are a bunch of poison pills in there that he really would have sat down with Boehner and said, all right, if I need 70 of your guys, what do I have to put in here? And what do I have to take out? And it really would have seen actual back and forth negotiating. I was recently told that in Ed Rollins' book, he says that early on in Reagan's presidency, he said, I need 70 votes for the Democrats to get bipartisan cover for the things I want to do. What can I do and what can I not do? And Tip O'Neill, helped work him out with some stuff. And it was kind of interesting that, there was this mutual interest in getting certain things done. Maybe you can argue it was a different era, but that's completely not been the Obama approach. And now he's in a situation where not only are the Republicans, almost entirely opposed to him, even members of his own party just don't believe him anymore. They just don't trust him.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's going to be even more the case when people see these poll numbers not really improving. Even the poll numbers for the jobs bill, they're kind of all over the place. Some still suggest that more like it than don't, but other polls suggest exactly the opposite. So it's clear that he doesn't have some sort of huge numbers advantage on this. And given where he is on everything else, I think as time goes on and more Democrats are actually vocal about this, that it's not going to be the campaign issue that really gives him a lot of legs and a lot of traction next year that he was hoping. So the good news for Obama is that he's got still some time to come up with a completely new strategy. And that's going to be obviously demonizing his opponent. So he's got to wait to find out who that is. Now, in terms of who that opponent might be, Mitt Romney, of course, has been the front runner for much of this race. Right now, it's Rick Perry, but Romney's considered, right there at the top one or two in this race. And he's picked up a key endorsement earlier this month, Jim, and Tim Pawlenty, who dropped out. He's also almost gotten another one. And if you read between the lines, I think he has gotten another one. And this one, I'm pretty sure he doesn't want. Here's former President Jimmy Carter on the Rachel Maddow Show on MSNBC.
Do you think that we have progressed far enough as a country in terms of recognizing religion as no barrier to public office, that he could be nominated, he could win as a Mormon?
I hope so. I hope he'll win. I'm not taking a position, but I would be very pleased to see him win the Republican nomination. I don't think anybody's going to beat Obama.
I love Jimmy Carter's logic here as well. If Ben Cardin was logic failure part A, part B comes from Jimmy Carter, who says Obama, there's no chance he could lose. I think Carter thought that about another president named Jimmy Carter back in 1980, Jim. So it's clear that this endorsement is one that Romney will want to keep pretty darn quiet.
Yeah, there's two thoughts that come to mind on that. I think the train of thought before it derailed and you know, into the peanut farm or something, kind of was saying that, well, it would be good for the country if you know, just as I think you don't necessarily have to be a huge fan of Obama to see a good thing in an African-American winning the presidency. It would, in a way, be nice to have a Mormon president just to prove that, well, religion is no obstacle. And it doesn't matter if your religion is seen as strange or unusual, but that we just don't have religion as a barrier to the highest office in the land. And I'd like to think that's where Carter's, you know, mind was going on this, but who the heck really knows? Secondly, you want to talk about, you know, this is the kiss of death. I mean, Jimmy Carter tested, Jimmy Carter approved. That's Mitt Romney. That's just not a message that's going to go very well in the Republican primaries. Having said that, I probably should point out that probably the only endorsement that is less helpful than Jimmy Carter's in a Republican primary is, at least based on recent history, national reviews. Traditionally, we see ourselves as the kiss of death. Phil Graham, obviously they endorsed Reagan. I believe they endorsed George W. Bush, but didn't help Romney that much last time around. We ran a cover story that begged the Democrats to nominate Howard Dean, and they didn't listen. So we can't really point fingers in terms of unhelpful endorsements that don't really help. But I got to say that, you know, at some point, Mitt Romney should just come out and say, you know, Jimmy, please don't vote for me.
Exactly right.
Please don't say nice things about me. Please denounce me, you know.
On to martini number three now. And, Jim, from time to time, we have greatly appreciated the eloquence on the Senate floor from Majority Leader Harry Reid, whether it's taking time before a busy lame duck session to go on and on and on about Nevada's defeat of Boise State, which was an upset, or his great fondness and love for the Cowboy Poetry Festival. Now Harry Reid is talking about the highway bill, but he's not talking about highways. He's talking about bike paths, and pretty sure the president's strategy for adding bike paths to this bill is not the same one as Harry Reid. First of all, before we get to the clip that Harry Reid does have here, he was talking about how bike paths are important so people can travel without emitting fossil fuels. And here's the second part.
Got up this morning very early and I went out and did my exercise. I'm not exaggerating. Scores, at least 30 or 40 bikes. So scores may be a slight exaggeration of people not just for exercise, traveling to work. Their backpacks on, they're going to work. That's what bike paths are all about.
This is no exaggeration, Jim. Okay, it's a slight exaggeration. But this...
Scores! By that, I mean 30.
A score and a half. The president, I'm pretty sure the argument he would make here is that people building bike paths will be helpful for jobs. People riding bike paths to work, and a lot of people around Washington and other major cities do that. But in terms of putting 15, 16 million people back to work, I'm not sure being able to get to work on a bike is the key to that.
You know, Harry Reid is one of our favorite targets. And so you listen to this, you think about his ode to cowboy poetry, his declaration that we only lost, 50,000 jobs, and that's really good, you know, stuff like that. There's kind of a stream of consciousness element to whenever he speaks on the floor of the Senate. And I kind of wonder, like, maybe that's why people want to be in the Senate, is that you just go to the floor and just rattle on about whatever's on your mind or what you saw on your way to work today. I saw lots of people biking, and then as I went by a tree, there was a squirrel. The squirrel was collecting nuts, and that is what we need to do, America. You know, you just got to see that Harry Reid doesn't go there with a plan. I don't think he's reading off of notes. I don't think he's really got a clear set of – it's just, I'm the Senate Majority Leader, and here's what's on my mind today. It's about like one paperclip away from an Andy Rooney routine. Did you ever notice that people are on bikes a lot? When did that become a big deal, huh? Don't wear your biking shorts to the congressional office.
If this
and
man,
now everyone's picturing Harry Reid in biker shorts. And hey, it's a good thing it's the end of the week, huh, Greg?
Well, it's a really good thing we sent him back to the Senate last year, wasn't it, Jim?
Yes, yes. Way to go, Nevada. Way to go.
All right. Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.